And good morning, good morning. This is episode 26 of Coffee with the Coder. Thank you for joining us today early in December. This makes an entire year that Coffee with the Coder has been coming every other Monday for you, 10:10 Eastern. And we're just happy to be able to share the information that's coming from our auditors who are studying all these questions and choosing some ones. This particular episode is going to be pretty much about CPT. So thanks for joining in. There was a conference, a national conference for the AMA, where they did an update to CPT last month in Chicago. And, of course, we had people there, and some of the questions were just amazing. So we have decided to share those with you because even though it's a national conference, not everyone gets to go. And so you may not have heard. It's a really good chance that a lot of you haven't heard all of this detail, and we want to make sure that to share it with you because they're fascinating. Good morning, Paula and Rucha and everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yay. Thank you. I'm just going to start in there. I've got to make sure that that I'm not just forgetting that other people can dial in. So I'm muting some lines and making sure that this is available. But let me just start and give you the first question that was mentioned. Not the first one they heard, but the first one we're going to talk about. It always gets asked, pretty much all the conferences, and it got asked again this time. Are the E&M guidelines changing anytime in the future? And if so, will there be collaboration with CMS?
Well, Pam, I'm gonna take these questions this week. This is Paula.
Okay.
The answer that was given by both the CPT panel and CMS is yes, of course. They are looking at ways in which would be effective, I guess I would say, to change those E&M documentation guidelines. And they said absolutely there would be collaboration with CMS regarding those guidelines. There were proposed changes previously, but interestingly, CMS did not like those proposed changes, so they were, you know, kicked out and said, no, we're not going to take those. They do not know, and that's both coming from CPT and CMS, or the AMA and CMS, that, you know, when this is going to happen. What they did say is that they are being extremely careful not to make any missteps that would cause unintended consequences because the codes are used by, you know, so many, you know, virtually almost every provider, physician provider almost. And this is always sort of like the elephant in the room. Many of us, you know, want to see change here. It just has, they just so far have no clear definitive plan in order to change it because it seems, you know, that the ramifications could be so huge. Like I think it was one of the primary physicians with the AMA said, we just want to make sure not to make missteps. So this has been a long-standing discussion over several years. So Pam? The next question.
Thank you. Yes, and we're going to look at this one in relation to the changes to the bone marrow biopsy codes. They ask, will the code G, as in go, 0364 for bone marrow aspiration performed with bone marrow biopsy through the same incision, is that going to go away?
Okay, and the response was yes, that code is going away January 1st. So as you likely know, the G codes are used to identify professional procedures and services that would otherwise be coded in CPT, but there usually is no CPT code. So it refers us, the HCPCS manual refers us to the CPT code book to look for other options. However, this definition was the original definition, but in more recent years, Medicare has also created G codes to for us to report on claims when maybe the CPT code, you know, there were coverage issues related to it. So one of the things I want to say to you as far as the bone marrow biopsies is we are doing, as I indicated before the show started today, our CPT updates webinar on Thursday. We will be discussing the bone marrow biopsies, but just know for the question that was asked currently that the G code G0364 for aspiration with biopsy through the same incision will be going away. So, you know, that's just a little piece of information and just to let you know one of the things we'll be discussing on Thursday.
Thank you, Paula. Let me jump right in with another one. if a patient is getting hydration for, let's say, 75 minutes, and there's a break in the administration on the same day the hydration is continued, so it's completed after an additional 80 minutes, is the continuation billable, or does it have to be discarded as unbillable?
Okay, so this question, and actually, you know, even though it was asked at the conference, we get this type of question a lot related to injections and infusions. And the question was referring to the hydration CPT codes 96360 and 96361. 96360 is for the initial 31 minutes to the first hour, and 61 is for each additional hour. In the question, the total time is 155 minutes, and the requester is asking if it's appropriate to report the 96360 times 1 for the first hour and 96361 times 2 for the subsequent hours. So, or should we report 96360 times 1 for the initial hour, recognizing that the 15-minute overage in the initial hour, if it was just the 75 minutes, if that would not be billed. And CMS's response was, you know, if it is not continuous, but they start the hydration and then they stop it and there's a break in time and then they go back and restart the hydration, it would be a continuous calculation of time, but you would not count the time of the break. So if it started at 10 and it stopped at 11:15, you got that first 75 minutes, and that would be reported with the 96360 for that initial hour. But then if you broke from, you know, 11:15 to 12:45 minutes, that time would not be calculated. But then you started back at 12 and then followed through that additional 80 minutes, that time would be reported with the 96361 times 2 hours, and that would be, it would be 2 hours because the second hour went more than 31 minutes. So anytime you're billing hydration services, in order to bill those subsequent time, the additional hours, the time has to go 31 minutes into that next hour in order to report it, just like the initial code says, 31 minutes to an hour. Now, our response, as we reflected on this response from CMS, every encounter is different, and if the patient hydration would have stopped and the catheter access removed and then later it was determined they needed to reaccess, then you may have a situation where you would report two initial services, the 96360 times 2, or 60 and then a 60 again with a 59. This might happen in the situation where a patient is in the ER, gets hydration, then gets discharged, goes home, and then comes back to the ER later that same calendar day, and then hydration is started again for a medically necessary reason. And this is, again, we're not just putting that line in to keep the vein open to do something further. So, Pam, on to question,
thank
the next
you.
Question.
Thank you. Yes, that's fascinating. So if a physician does a mini laparotomy during a laparoscopic procedure, is that open?
Per CMS, no, this would still be reported as a laparoscopic procedure in CPT. It would not be reported as an open procedure.
Okay. So I've got one more. Can a student be a scribe?
Oh, we had a lot of discussion, or they had a lot of discussion, which I thought was fascinating at the AMA, and then we talked about it afterward. Yes, a student can be a scribe for a physician, but the rules for the student documenters kind of gets a little hairy with the need for the clear documentation of who is doing what. CMS contractors were adamant to say Medicare does not pay for students performing the services, or any service. So your state or your other payer rules may be different than this, but CMS says Medicare will not do it.
Okay. So suppose the student or other scribe, doesn't have to be a student, is interjecting into the conversation with the patient and documents the conversation and interjects with the physician interpretation and the physician signs. Is this a problem?
Well, let's be clear, and this is how CMS addressed that. They said, scribes are meant to document or take dictation of exactly what is stated. They're not meant to interpret, and that is whether it's a student or any other individual, the documentation should be clear. So they're not meant to interpret the care that's provided. They're not meant to interpret what's going on with that patient. That's for the physician. So the documentation should be extremely clear about who is performing the service and who is documenting it. Documentation that appears to indicate the scribe or the student or whoever is documenting that encounter is actually interpreting the patient situation, that documentation is problematic. Remember, Medicare does not pay for student services, or students performing services. And what they did is they recommended that if you wanted to know the appropriateness of care for someone other than the physician, documenting the performance of the service or interpreting, you would refer to the teaching rules, the split shared visit rules, or the incident to rules.
Thank you. Thank you. That was very helpful. And that's all my questions in the queue. We've run against our full 10 minutes, a little bit more than that. Thank you for joining us today. We have a CPT update class on Thursday, which will be replayed on Tuesday. So you can sign up for one and come to both. That's going to be at noon, beginning at noon Eastern on both days, the 7th and the 12th. So if you have still more questions on CPT, then you might want to do that. And then our next episode of Coffee with the Coder, episode number 27, will be 2 weeks from today on December 18th. So thank you for joining us today and being a part of Coffee with the Coder.